Post Harlan Mono Logics. Number 00038. Recorded on April 5, 2023. Production location, Post Harlan, Texas. Chapter 38.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised. Trigger warning. This series deals with topics that may be disturbing. Subject matter may include domestic violence, sexual abuse, and subsequent mental health disorders. If you are sensitive to such material, consider entertainment alternatives.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
Now, I had just mentioned about the grunge supergroup Mad Season and the LP that they released in 1995 called Above. And, of course, I made specific reference to the single that was released off of that LP called River of Deceit. And how its lyrical theme was based on concepts of a book by Khalil Gibran called The Prophet, right? And so in that, the lyrics were written by Layne Staley, and the vocals were also performed by Layne Staley. Layne Staley, of course, I've mentioned throughout this series, he's an integral part of it as one of the quote-unquote Big Four grunge bands. His sad story, loaded with drug addiction and problems related to that, finally came to a crashing end in the year of 2002, right? He died of his drug problems, overdoses, possibly intentionally. I don't know that anybody's really sure of the story. What I recall hearing about it, reading about it, when it happened, was that his body had been found after he had been dead for quite a number of days in some apartment somewhere. That Layne Staley, who was the vocalist, the singer for that Mad Season LP, was known, of course, as the singer for Alice in Chains, one of the Big Four grunge bands. And probably I would have to say my favorite of them. Probably. Yeah, I would say. Out of the Big Four, they were that was my favorite. But anyway, Layne Staley dead, 2002. And he's one of a fairly lengthy list of grunge singers who have died by now already. A lot of them died even back then. Some people refer to it as the dead grunge singer society. But the list of dead grunge era performers is not limited to singers, of course, guitars, bass players, etc. and so forth. But as far as singers go in general, I mean, check out this list. It really begins, really, the beginning of the grunge era was pretty much kicked off and spawned by the singer of Mother Love Bone, right? Andrew Wood. Andrew Wood is the singer of Mother Love Bone, who died of a heroin overdose, I believe, and his death was impactful socially on that Seattle, that quote-unquote Seattle scene, right? All the people, all these bands, the big four bands, they were integrally involved with each other. They were part of, you know, an actual scene, and so many of the artists, the musicians, the performers kind of mixed and matched. They played with each other and kind of formed up bands in this process of trial and error, but they had their own society. You know, a band would play a show and all the other bands would come and watch them and support them, right? That's what the scene was made out of, and an integral part of that scene was this Andrew Wood guy and his band Mother Love Bone. He died of the heroin addiction in 1990, and the result of his death was a bunch of people coming together to form a tribute album that was pretty much spearheaded, if I recall right, by Chris Cornell of Soundgarden, who I will speak to briefly. Speak of briefly, because actually, sadly, he's part of this list, right? Now, but yeah, Andrew Wood of Mother Love Bone died in 1990, and there was a story of the punk rock singer girl from a band out of Ohio who was also on the Seattle scene at the time, called the Gits, named Mia Zapata, who was raped and murdered in Seattle and just left on the street dead. That was in 1993. Really fucked up story. I've mentioned before at some length about Kurt Cobain and his quote-unquote suicide in 1994, which marked the end of grunge, technically. You all remember Blind Melon, right? Their singer, Shannon Hoon, right? 1995, he died, right? He was only 28. These people, by and large, were my age, you know, and they're all going down in flames. All of these, look, we're in 1995, same year, 1995. Bradley Nowell of Sublime, he died too. And then, as far as singers goes, as far as I could scrounge up here for this list, Scott Weiland of the Stone Temple Pilots in 2015. Now, he lived out the tragic course of Layne Staley and managed to malinger an extra 13 years. But the Stone Temple Pilots were just riddled with this guy's troubles. They couldn't put tours together. They couldn't start projects and finish them because Scott Weiland and all his problems, and a great singer, great performer. But finally, it got him in 2015. Mark Lanegan of a band called The Screaming Trees out of Seattle, he died with complications involving COVID, actually, only last year. So he lived out, as far as grunge singers are concerned, a pretty full life, right? I believe he was 57 when he died. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, Chris Cornell, the singer of the great band Soundgarden, died in 2017. And that was supposedly a suicide, too. But, of course, that is inundated with suspicious circumstances, right? And there's a lot of people don't realize, but Chris Cornell, several years before his, quite a few years actually, before his very untimely death, got involved with a beautiful Greek woman, right? Greek woman, and she was Greek Orthodox, and he converted. Chris Cornell converted to Orthodox Christianity, Eastern Orthodox Christianity, Greek Orthodox Christianity. And he lived out the last chunk of his adult years in that religion. Now, it's hard to suppose or infer or determine exactly how serious of an Orthodox Christian Chris Cornell was. There's a couple of ways to look at this. Even from my own perspective as an Orthodox Christian, and also as somebody who kind of got pulled into a church situation as the result of the woman he wanted to marry, right? Let me explain this, right? My very first marriage at a young age, I married into a Roman Catholic family, right? On the one side, they were Irish Catholics. On the other side, they were Polish Catholics, right? Two very strong Catholic groups. And while I was kind of politicking for a simple justice of the peace wedding out in the backyard with a barbecue and a volleyball net, you know, a couple of cases of beers for anybody who wanted to be a part of it, I was grossly outnumbered by this fairly large Catholic family that insisted it would be a Catholic wedding. So I had to go through the whole rigmarole of playing Catholic in order to satisfy their wants, right? And I mean, that was a process. I had to sit with the priest and go through a plan of, they called it pre-cana, every Sunday at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We went to this old couple's house that entertained a group of us. It was like 5 or 6 couples. They were an old, successful couple that had raised their kids up and sent them all off to college. And they were basically marriage counselors explaining the expectations of Catholic parents and a Catholic household, you know, which involved having many, many kids to help grow Catholicism, which I don't have a problem with that concept at all, but I was going through the motions, and this is the point I'm trying to make, right? To be married to the woman that I loved at that time, I had to jump through these fucking hoops. I was by no means Roman Catholic. I was an Antichrist motherfucker, but I had been raised up in that circumstance. I wasn't unfamiliar, and it was kind of easy for me to just, you know, walk in and say, yeah, I've already done, did this, what do they call it, the sacraments, right? When I finally got married in the Catholic Church, I think I have received 5 of the 7 Catholic sacraments. Again, like, unbeknownst to me, I just kind of stumbled into this shit, and I'm short of what? Last rites, and what's the other one? The entering into the clergy, ordination, right? Those were the two areas that I did not achieve as a Catholic. Obviously, I didn't get last rites. I'm still alive, and obviously, I'm not a Roman Catholic priest. Never was. But still, yeah, you know, getting married there, and I had the fifth of seven sacraments, and it was all bullshit. Now, why do I say all that? Because on the one hand, with Chris Cornell, and we try to determine how serious of an Orthodox Christian he may or may not have been, there is that possibility that he simply went through the motions of Orthodox Christianity, Greek Orthodoxy, as it was, as a stipulation to be with this woman. Now, I would think that woman, if that was a stipulation to her, would be some semblance of pretty serious Orthodox Christian, and I don't think she would settle for anything less than a man who was also serious. Now, I could be wrong. You know, I could be wrong. It may be that her parents insisted that she gets married in the church, and she wasn't all that serious. So both of them were just kind of playing games, going through the motions. Who can know? You know, who can know? Except the people who were intimately involved with all that. So on the one hand, he may not have had a very serious conversion, and he may not, as a result of that, he may not have followed up with the growing of his faith, with the pursuit of truth, with the development of his righteousness, everything that comes with being a Christian in general, and especially an Orthodox Christian, right? He may have not been down with that, you know? And then the other hand is, that's a very serious person, Chris Cornell. You listen to his music, you listen to him speak in interviews. That was a serious-minded individual. And I don't know that he would have went through motions. I think, you know, with that background, with the Seattle scene and the punk ethos, the authenticity involved with it. And then, of course, you know, in the circles that he ran in, it would be something of a disparagement to be found out to have converted to any form of Christianity, right? He is a musician, a rock musician, which is heavily tied to the left, which is heavily, generally opposed to Christianity. Right? It just puts him in a bad light. So a lot of this shit doesn't add up to me. I believe that conversion would actually require something of a conviction in this man, right? But who's to know? It could go either way. Was it a farce or was it serious? And then, you know, included in this whole question of and consideration of Chris Cornell's authenticity with Greek Orthodoxy, he was buddy-buddy with another dead singer, a new metal guy, not quite from the grunge era, but early 2000s, right? The singer from Linkin Park, Chester Bennington, right? Those two were buddy-buddy. Buddy-buddy to the degree that they were like family. Buddy-buddy to the degree that when Chris Cornell and the Greek woman that he married, when they had a child, they brought that child into the Greek Orthodox Church to be baptized. Chester Bennington was the godfather in that situation. So he had some kind of connection with Orthodoxy as a result of that moment at least. And it is not known whether he actually converted or not, or was in the process of it, or was considering it. But him being very close to Chris Cornell is a very interesting thing. Now, Chris Cornell, of course, died, like I said, in 2017 in his 50s. I think he was 52 years old when that happened. He's just slightly by a year or two older than me. But still, Generation X, the first oldest part of Generation X, and obviously grunge era singer extraordinaire. Truly was. While it is true that his whole life was a mixture, it was a dance around the difficulties of major depression and drug and alcohol abuse, just like everybody, it seems, you know, in the grunge era. Certainly me, as I sit here and speak, that's the fabric of my life, right? Until I came to faith, and then even a little after that. And this is a point I'm trying to make, you know. I came to faith in Christ, and it was within 5 years of that my depression lifted. And the only reason that depression lingered is because I was, quote-unquote, living in sin, right? I had this lifestyle of sexual immorality that was persisting fairly deeply into my faith. And it was what I call the albacore around my neck, right? To make a comedic reference again to The Sopranos. The Jersey and Me keeps on coming out with all these mafioso movie references, right? But that's kind of a funny line. It's supposed to be albatross or around the neck, which is an expression of burden, right? It's the burden that I carried, but Sopranos, it was mistakenly referred to as the albacore, which is a tuna fish around the neck. I love that. It's just so funny to me. But this lifestyle circumstance of getting immediately involved without wedlock to a woman at the very beginning of my walk of faith burdened me, hindered me, and the depression that I suffered remained with me until finally we were able to dissolve that situation completely, right? The minute that woman was out of my life, I skyrocketed into a whole new dimension of positivity and strength that I had not had any real encounter with probably since the age of 10, you know? I just went right through the roof, like in a great way. My whole being elevated instantly when the albacore around my neck was released. Now, why do I say all this? Proper living in a proper manner as a proper Christian would serve to resolve those particular inner demons that had me depressed and suicidal, right? The faith absolutely works in resolving that. For me, it was like a two-prong attack against my devils, right? I talk about the first 19 years I had in recovery, right, from alcoholism and drug addiction. Again, the same kind of problems that beleaguered these grunge-era musicians and killed them off in a lot of cases, as I've already expressed. The beginning of my walk into the light spiritually begins with my foxhole prayers at the end of my alcoholism at the bottom of my well out to a God I didn't know, and then following through with the doors he opened up, I enter into AA, I get into the 12 steps, and now I'm in the pursuit of God with a capital G. And for 19 years, I did it on my own terms. And as a result of that, I still carried the albacore around my neck of the demons of depression, because I was living immorally that entire time in one way or another, usually involved with living circumstances of what's the word I'm looking for? Fornication, right? The sin of fornication. My sexual immorality as a heterosexual was being involved with women while I was out of wedlock. That was all adultery against either the wife I was divorced from or the wife to come later in time, who I'm with now, right? And that's a lot to get into. I don't mean to like go into all that road. I had my sexual immorality, which was that albacore around my neck for all those years, for those 19 years. Well, not all of those 19 years, because I was properly married for a couple of them in the beginning, right? But before we entered into that, out of wedlock, in the bed, right? So, that was my biggest concern. That was what was beleaguering me. That was preventing me from really walking into the light. It was the basic resistance I had to Christ was really made out of my desire to prioritize that way of life. To seeking out, you know, in my heart of hearts, on the noble side of me, I really just wanted to be the one woman man, to have that one right woman, and my pursuit of that right one woman would be to try them all out for size until I figured out which one was right, which was completely the fucking wrong way to go about it, which I would learn later, and ultimately I would do it the right way, and so, lo and behold, look at the wonderful results that come from it, right? God on God's terms and doing things God's way. But anyway, all of that. And what am I trying to come to with that? Ultimate. All right, I was talking about these basic two phases of my life. The problem of the drugs and alcohol was resolved with the 12-step program and the fledgling beginnings of a walk into the light in pursuit of God with a capital G, right? As the steps of AA guide us into and through. When I finally was able to get over the quote-unquote Jesus hump in my life, that resistance to Christianity, that was what got rid of the depression demons in me. But in my case, it was delayed because I continued with that immoral lifestyle by living with a woman out of wedlock. And the funny thing is, I got in that situation thinking I was doing a good and noble thing. I stayed in that situation because I thought that's what God would have me do. And I had it all fucking wrong. I had it all wrong in those regards. That was still me mind-fucking myself. Trying to alter and adjust the components of my circumstances in such a way that I can ultimately exist within God's terms, yet on my own terms, which is dumb. It's fucking dumbass, but dumbass as I was. All right, so the point is, these problems with these singers throughout their lives, right? Chris Cornell battled, the fabric of his life involved this depression and his response of self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. And now we know that he, quote unquote, converted to orthodoxy. So he did that and got appropriately, properly married in the church. So it wasn't sexually immoral, his relationship with his Greek wife. There's a really good chance that he had set himself up appropriately to be absolved of his demons. And that's a point I'm trying to make where Chris Cornell is concerned. And if his demons were absolved, he would not have been suffering depression. If he was not suffering depression, he would not have hung himself. And that's what they say. It was suicide by hanging in a hotel room in Detroit following a Soundgarden concert, right? He had gotten back together with Soundgarden and they were on a tour, right? Now, there's a million reasons why I could be wrong about that. Now, obviously, his conversion could have been a farce. Never really put the depression behind him for one reason or another. Perhaps, like living out on the road, you still had all these groupies and shit coming up to you. Maybe he had caved into a temptation and then the guilt overwhelmed him and it triggered his depression, right? Because you see, I draw that relation between sexual immorality and the continuing presence of the demons of depression in our lives, even if we are Christian, right? We're Christian and living a lifestyle of immorality. Our demons will persist within us, whatever they may be, you know. In this case, Chris Cornell and I share those same kind of demons. But it could be other demons that people have, you know. But they will persist in spite of your faith. You know, your faith is a journey. And as you go, all of the immorality starts falling off you piece by piece. He may have not been to the point where his demons fell off, or he may have done some illicit acts that triggered the demons, or that returned them back into his being. He fell back into depression. Maybe he did something that made him feel guilty that night, and maybe he hung himself. But there has been a lot of doubt right from the get-go that that even happened. That though he had depression problems in his life, at that point in his life, that wasn't an issue in his life. The circumstances seem really peculiar. And then, of course, Chester Bennington died also, and the circumstances were also a little bit strange, right? A little bit suspect. As I expressed, he was very close compadres with Chris Cornell. And in the same year, the both of these guys turn up dead. Both of them in suspicious circumstances. What are the commonality with these people, right? Well, they're both singers, so they got both, they're both celebrities. They got voices, right? They were friends. Like brothers, like family, that kind of friendship, very close. Potentially both of them were Orthodox Christians. Probably not, but potentially. But here's the kicker. Both of them were involved with a major documentary that was in production. That was an expose on child trafficking. Both of these men were reckoned to have suffered abuse as children, right? Physical abuse, sexual abuse, which of course is, like I made reference all through this series, that super unknown potentially, like something happened and you didn't know what it was and you got a mental block, right? Or you do know what it was. But in either case, it's a traumatic event that brings those demons I speak about into your existence. It brings them in. Whether you like it or not, innocent or not, that's the touch of the degenerate. That's the sin coming into your life. Your innocence stolen. And of course, the subsequent results was for both of them, lifetimes of, as I said, depression and drug abuse, ultimately ending up in, you know, quote-unquote suicide. And it just doesn't completely line up properly. Obviously, suspicious circumstances. And, you know, when you look into child trafficking and sex trafficking in this world, and you consider the purpose of these things, right? Why does these kind of quote-unquote industries, right? These entrepreneurial opportunities exist worldwide. On the one hand, you've got sexuality, right? Sex trafficking and child trafficking alike is a matter of prostitution and pornography, ultimately. But on the other hand, where child trafficking is concerned specifically, then you're into the body organs. There's actually an industry of kidnapping people, removing their organs from them, and selling them off at extremely high prices to extremely wealthy people. In order to do what? Perpetuate their longevity. Right? Perpetuate their longevity. We're talking about people that do not have faith in Christ, therefore do not understand an afterlife, therefore require to squeeze as many fucking minutes out of existence as they know it presently by whatever means possible. And of course, the richer and wealthier you are, the more means you have. The more means you have, the more you've got to spend on the organs of children. This is fucking sickness, all right? This is sickness. It's evil on so many levels. You know, I try to like run it through the Ten Commandments and it just violates fucking everything. One way or another, it just seems to violate everything. Everything. So you've got this body organ trade that's going on in the world, right? And think of it, like, you know, you get liver cancer, so you need a liver transplant, and you end up on the liver transplant list. Who races to the top? There was always that story with Mickey Mantle, right? Mickey Mantle, the great New York Yankee from the 50s and 60s. Obviously very famous baseball player. Also a very well-known drunk who got the due measures of a life of drunkenness by, you know, getting the cirrhosis of the liver, the liver cancer, and needing a transplant. He got his transplant. His celebrity moved him to a top of a very lengthy list. This was back in the 90s, I believe, right? So we're talking about grunge here. Is it 80s or 90s, right, that this was going on? And there was a whole lot of head scratching. It's like, well, Mickey Mantle gets liver cancer, and all of a sudden he's got a transplant organ ready for him, while all these other people have been on the list for like five fucking years and they're at death's door and they're not even close to getting to the top, right? So the attainment of body organs, you know, replacement parts for failing systems is a very big deal. And the people with the means can skirt the system and make sure that they get what they need, you know? And there's always the talk about, like, the adrenochrome, right? The what do you say, hormone that's involved with adrenaline taken from a certain part of the body. I don't know everything there is to know about it, but the idea, but what they were killing children to get like this fresh, raw, pure adrenochrome that people, you know, wealthy, the elite people consume to prevent aging, right? They get some kind of crazy high off of it, but at the same time, it keeps their youth. And all the celebrities and the well-to-do, it was supposed to be like this whole rampant thing through society and Hollywood and then other elite societies, you know, where the money is. And I have no personal experience with this shit, so I don't know, but I'm just saying, this is the kind of talk that's been out there the last 10, 15 years regarding the market of selling organs, right? That's a part of it. You know, and like I said, the other side of it is just straight up, you know, prostitution and pornography. Experience with prostitutes, even in my life, way back in my Antichrist motherfucker years, you know, it was revealing. I had conversations with people who were basically either kidnapped directly out of the Eastern Bloc countries, Ukraine, Russia, Kazakhstan, out that away, right? They were either kidnapped outright or lied to, saying that, you know, they had an international dance troupe and you're a beautiful woman and we'll bring you in and you'll make money and you could send it home. And they sign up for this and they get on the boat or whatever and they end up as prostitutes. And here's the kicker. This is what happens. Once they are in the possession of these evil people, they're told if they don't do what they're expected to do, that they're parents back home and their kids back home, if they had them, they're going to get killed one by one. And that's how these fucking scumbags work it. They're stealing people out of their lives, ripping them away from their family, and then threatening them with the murder of their family members if they don't comply. And it becomes sex slavery. And it's been going on for a very, very long time, even to this day. So anyway, I mean, with Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington, they obviously had some kind of interest in these things. You would have to reckon that it's based on their own experience in their life and that they probably come to a place of overcoming all that, which also becomes a head scratcher is why that they would kill themselves, right? They both found themselves with a mission to live. And they've both rubbed elbows at least with very powerful Christianity, very meaningful Christianity, if they were at all serious about what they were involved with there. Committing suicide, you know, you have like a double mission. You have double mission as a Christian to carry forth the message, which is God's work. And then on the other hand, they had specifically an interest to go after this child trafficking and this sex trafficking stuff. I think their interest was particularly the child trafficking. That's a reason to live. If I could find a way to be involved with that battle, I'm in. I just don't know where to turn. You know, I don't know where to turn. And if you all have ideas, you let me know. That is a worthy cause. And I do believe I have the metal for it. So both of these guys, they were in the process, like I said, in the production of a documentary that was going to expose a lot of this child trafficking stuff. And, you know, in spite of the fact that they both had endured to that point lifetimes of depression and drug abuse, I've revealed to you here that, you know, Christ is the answer to all of these problems. I am proof unto myself of that, right? That the examples that I give of my own life. And as a result of that evidence, you know, I therefore believe. I believe that Christ is the answer to these problems, and that both of those men potentially had those answers in hand or at hand when they suddenly were dead. I believe that. And here's some other things I believe. Now that we're in the neighborhood of talking about some of this very serious subject matter, the goings-on in the world, all right, I believe this shit here. A, I believe that both of these men were assassinated. I think that their death was intentional. I think it was murder. And I think it had everything to do with this child trafficking in the documentary, right? B, I believe the Western elite, right? Western elite are heavily invested in child trafficking and sex trafficking in nations where they have co-opted the governments, right? You know what I mean by that? You see the things that United States does, our kind of version of quote-unquote colonialism that has been going on with CIA operatives all through the world through my entire life, right? The scumbaggery that the CIA has been involved with from their inception, going back into the 50s, right? What was the they did the fucking Bay of Pig things that they fucked up behind JFK's back when they were told not to do it. Then they killed JFK. I know it. You know it. We all know it. That's what happened. It was those. It's those scumbags. That's the shadow government behind everything. And all through my entire existence, they've been going into all these little third world countries and second world countries and toppling governments and establishing their own partnership regimes and raping and pillaging the nations for whatever they can get out of it, right? This has been the way. There's the America of the patriotic, constitutional, freedom-loving American man and woman. And then there is this quote-unquote America that is these fucking pirates, these elite intelligence pirates, literally. Think Skull and Crossbones out of Yale. That's the icon of the Jolly Roger, which is piracy, right? And they do it draped in the American flag. There's the America that we the people are, and then there's this other America that those scumbags are. And so what I'm saying here, I believe those scumbags are heavily invested in child trafficking and sex trafficking in these nations that they have co-opted, the governments. And currently, I think the biggest one of them all is the news headlines of the day, every day for the past year and couple of months. Ukraine, where my family comes from. I believe Ukraine is ground zero for the greater part of the trafficking. What do I mean by that? I mean most of it. That is the fucking hub of all of this shit going on. And it has been, and it has been for close to 10 fucking years, right? They have been stealing people out of Ukraine for much longer than that. Ever since the wall came down, communism ended, and the Soviet system fell apart. They have been stealing people out of there. It's all been about drugs and prostitution. And now it's become like the central hub of all of it. The greater part of the trafficking is what I'm saying. It's coming out of Ukraine and or going through Ukraine one way or another. And that's a big part of the military operations that's going on there now and has been for the past year and couple of months. What's it been, 14 months now? I believe Ukraine is ground zero for the greater part of the trafficking that many very important people, right, VIPs, are warding off blackmail, right, on one hand, and international investigation on the other. What do I mean by that? People in the Ukraine that have been involved with the Western elite conducting these illicit operations involving the trafficking of, the sex trafficking and or child trafficking, for two examples of other illicit activities, right? And I'll get into that. They are being blackmailed. We scratch our head and wonder why so many billions and billions of dollars are going out to Zelensky, right? The quote-unquote president of the Ukraine as it stands, who was an installed puppet regime leader set up by the Western elite in 2014. And there's pictures there that go across party lines of the senators who were involved with that whole thing, right? The Western elite moved into Ukraine and dispossessed a duly elected president who was favorable towards alliances with Russia. That was who was elected by the people, and that person was ran the fuck off by the power of Western elite. NATO, CIA, United States, Senate, those powers changed the leadership dynamic of that country and therefore its destiny. And now, 8-9 years later, look at where they're at, right? So on the one hand, there's blackmail. Who's blackmailing? Zelensky and his people are blackmailing American government officials who are involved with their nefarious activities. When Zelensky wants more money, he says he wants more money. When he says it, he gets it. Our government officials are trying to put a noble face on it, like they are providing for this great war effort against the evil Putin. But I believe the truth of the matter is they're blackmailed. There's insiders in the Ukraine who know the shit that they have done. And if they ever get found out, they're going to get fucking hung. So they're owned. They're owned. They can't kill Zelensky because there's a whole chain of people who have the information. They're stuck now. They're stuck. And what really made this fucked up, well, before I get to that, on the one hand, it's that blackmail that these Western elites are trying to ward off. And on the other hand, it's the internal investigation, right? What do I mean by that? There's a lot of Americans who believe like I believe. And, you know, almost all of them are more worthy and powerful than me when it comes to these kind of curiosities, right? That there are people who are involved in the media, people who are involved in politics, people who are politicians, right there in the same room deliberating over policies and bills on a federal level, who understand that there's nefarious activities involved in the Ukraine and obviously other parts of the world where our intelligence has intervened and co-opted power and raped and pillaged, as they do. That's what they do. There are people that want to take a real square look at all of this shit and find out what the truth is, you know? Expose it. Bring it to light. These people know the truth, I think. They just got to bring it to light. So, all of the people who are part of this nefarious network, who will be implicated when that light falls on the situation, they're working together. Listen to me. They're working together. Crossing party lines, right? This is where you have across the party lines. This is why you have a certain portion of quote-unquote Republicans who quote-unquote stand with Ukraine, while of course the Democrats do also. These people are known as the RINOs. What does that mean? Republican in name only. What does that mean? They're not truly conservative. They're pirates. They're pirates elected into the Republican Party. And they are known as neocons. They are known as Bush Republicans, because Bush is what? CIA, right? That's a whole legacy of CIA. And what else? Skull and crossbones, right? All of this shit. These are those Bush Republicans slash RINOs who are integrally involved in the criminality that they share with Democrats on the other side of the aisle, involved with the same shit. These people are working together to protect their interest, to save their fucking skin over what they've done in Ukraine. These are things I believe. I'm going out now. I'm letting you know something I don't normally talk about. But what the hell? I'm in the neighborhood. Chris Cornell, Chester Bennington, that shit pisses me off. You know that. And I relate to it because of the depression and the alcohol. More than that, the idea of child trafficking, the whole thing, the defender of the innocent thing that I brought up, and actually come to tears over when certain songs come on and certain memories come up, right? That pisses me off too. So this all means something to me. So what was I saying? Ukraine ground zero for the greater part of the trafficking. Many VIPs are warding off blackmail on one hand and this internal investigation on the other. Right? The internal investigation is why they cannot have somebody like Donald Trump in power, because Trump is going after that stuff. He was president for 4 years, and while he was going after this shit. And they were petrified. And that's where the hatred of Donald Trump comes from. They say so. And they say to the media, you say so. And all the big money of the world is going to the media, and they're reading from their teleprompter their marching orders. And they are infecting society with their propaganda. And they got you believing things that are a distortion of the truth of the situation. Bear with me as I go, all right? I also believe, right, while we're talking about what I believe that Zelensky, right, that quote-unquote president of the Ukraine, fucked up big time and caused this kind of panic situation when he caved and began to cater towards these nationalist Ukrainians, right? Who are Nazis, right? They're like fucking fascists. They're nationalist, anti-Russian Ukrainians from the western side, right? They're western side of Ukraine. If you know anything about Ukraine at all, and I do, there's really always been two Ukraines, an eastern one and a western one. The western one is affiliated with Europe. It's Western-minded. It's influenced by Poland predominantly. And through that influence are Catholic. Now, the Ukrainian Catholics are what's known as Eastern or Byzantine Catholics. But still, that all ends up with the papacy. They're Catholics. Cross over the Dnieper River in the middle of the country and you go out into the east, you have a Russian influence culturally over there, and it's always been that way, and they're Orthodox over there. So you got Russia versus Poland in terms of influence, which is representative of East and West. And what I mean by that is there's different mentalities. There's an Eastern mentality and a Western mentality. Whole different way, whole different worldview, right? And there's a lot of conflict between it because your beliefs are based on your worldview, right? So you got Russia versus Poland, you got East versus West in terms of mentality, you've got Orthodoxy versus Catholicism. you've got two Ukraines. It's always been that way. It's always been. My father taught me this shit when I was a little kid. He taught me this shit when I was a little kid. My family's Eastern Ukrainian. In fact, we come from the Donbass. In fact, we come from a Donetsk region. In fact, we come from the outskirts of the city where the entire civil war began. Slavyansk. It all happened with an attack there. A missile attack on that small industrial city triggered the civil war. And this is what I'm talking to right now, right? Zelensky fucked up catering to these Nazis, these nationalist Ukrainians, these Western, Easternized Ukraine, or Westernized Ukrainians who wanted to rid that Donbass, basically Eastern Ukraine, of Russian culture completely. They want a completely Ukrainian Ukraine as they define what Ukrainian is. Problem is, there's two Ukraines, and like I said, there always was. What's going on now in the headlines with the monastery outside of Kiev is they are trying to drive Eastern Ukrainians out, the actual Ukrainian Orthodoxy, which is connected to the Moscow Patriarchate, out of Kiev. They're trying to run these people out of Kiev completely. This is all part of this stuff. But what had happened was Zelensky apparently caved into the pressures of these nationalist Ukrainians to eradicate Russian influence from the east of Ukraine, which would in turn change the dynamic of Ukraine from a nation that's capable of voting in the interests of their friendship with Russia, with Moscow, with Putin, to one that is affiliated predominantly with the West and becoming part of Europe, you know? And doing what is done with and through Ukraine, continuing to profit, running off these criminal schemes. I know that the Ukraine has been fucked up ever since they got their independence. I have a cousin that came from there. He immigrated to Canada. I was at the airport when he showed up. We spent that. Me and my father spent days with him and his family. And what he had to say about Ukraine, and this was the early 90s in the grudge era, go figure. Already at that point, the economy was based on sex and prostitution and drug dealing. They were moving fucking drugs through Ukraine out into the world to get money. The entire economy was based on that. It was a fucking shithole to have to live in. Everything was criminal. And that's why him and his family had to get out. He was working as an engineer. And so, you know, industrial engineer in some big old fucking plant somewhere. He was a director level person. He gave up the life he had worked towards. It got him and his wife out and out into North America, only to find out that they didn't really have anything for him to do over here. He was taking on shit jobs and he didn't like it. He couldn't bring himself to that level. But anyway, that's a whole different story. I experienced firsthand somebody fleeing from Ukraine as it was 30 fucking years ago, right? And what he had to say about the place was it was already a criminal economy back then, and it's only gotten worse over time. Zelensky fucked up when he catered to these Nazis, the criminals that they were, those nationalists, and started that civil war to try to run Russian-oriented people out of Ukraine, trying to kill them off. That's what's going on there. And because they took that action to do that, they created the conflict that is happening now. The military operation that Russia has come in to do is to protect those people with their cultural relation to Moscow, to not let him get to not let him go through genocide. The persistence that the quote-unquote Ukrainians had in that situation, fomenting this civil war, created a very precarious situation for the Western elites, who are tied to the nefarious activities, the criminal activities, that they will hang for when it's revealed. I believe also that Zelensky has, and this is tied to the blackmail, Zelensky has the current U.S. regime over a barrel with regards to the trafficking. And that here's not only trafficking that I'm talking about. Drugs, like I had mentioned earlier, are probably a big part of it too. People don't talk much about that. But then the biolabs thing, right? The whole potentiality for the origins of COVID, the virus that was spread around the world, to kind of shut down the dissemination of all this information, you know? The world was in a lockdown during the COVID days. You couldn't travel internationally, right? There's a reason that people, that happened. It wasn't organic. Now, it is said to have emanated out of the Wuhan, China wet markets through the bats, right? People eat bats over there. But the thought is that the actual COVID was developed in Ukraine and then sprung free over in Wuhan to have the world looking to China to blame for it all. Which is a cover for what was really going on. So the biolabs, and biolabs are a fact. There are very many of them. And Putin's military action into the Ukraine is about capturing those labs and mounting evidence of nefarious activity, which connects back to the West, to NATO, to all these scumbag politicians and elite people, the globalists in general. I believe that. I believe that shit to be true. And of course, we already have a lot of insight into nefarious energy-related deals with the Biden family, right? With Hunter Biden going in there, and he was being some high executive level person and some energy industry corporation making a boatload of money for doing fucking nothing, but arranging sit downs with the senator and the VP and ultimately now the president. A lot of heavy shit, but because of Zelensky's integral involvement from 2014 till now over all of those arrangements, he's got these people over the barrel. Like I said, the blackmail. And that's why these billions keep on getting sent to Ukraine. Anything they could do. You know, a lot of it is in the form of old military equipment, right? Which is good for our defense industry. We push all the old shit out of our military so we can make new shit, and there's more money for those people to be had. That's the whole War Hawk thing, which is part of the whole Bush Republican over the aisle with the Democrats deal. Everybody's making money on that. You know, biblically, it says that money is the root of all kinds of evil. There's money to be made in all this, and they've taken a lot of chances, doing a lot of nefarious things. I believe it to be true. I believe that they're at the cusp of being fucking completely outed. And this is going to be really interesting to see if good prevails in these matters. I believe also that both Putin and Trump are good guys in this matter. They're out to bring all this corruption to justice. They are the people in the world who are working against the Western elite who are involved in all these corrupt activities. It may even be that Xi Jinping, the president of China, is also on board with this. That's a maybe. That's yet to really be, in my mind, proven out. The big evidence to me in this is that Trump and Putin, as a result of this effort to cast a light on these activities, these nefarious activities, they are both publicly, very publicly hated by the corrupt elite. They have been made into the media boogeyman of this era, right? There's always some kind of media boogeyman where these CIA operations are concerned. Right? Early 90s, we'll go to the grunge era and bring it forward. Early 90s, you had the I was going to say Ayatollah Khomeini. Bring it back to the late 70s with Iran. You had the boogeyman of the Ayatollah Khomeini. Right? And then in the 80s, Gorbachev was the boogeyman until actually the wall came down. Then he stopped being the boogeyman. But until that happened, he was the boogeyman. Right? He was the big Russian bear, and nuclear holocaust was at hand, right? The Soviets and all that, and boycotting the Olympics and all this shit that was going on, you know, in our heyday, Generation X, growing up in the 80s. And when he was done being the boogeyman, then it was Saddam Hussein, right? That was a personal fucking thing between him and George Bush, H.W. Bush. And ultimately, that boogeyman would be executed by George W. Bush, right? In that administration. Now, what other boogeymen were there, you know? At 9/11, you had Osama bin Laden, for one. Probably in the late 90s, there was probably more of an emphasis. This was like the rise of the neocons. So now the Palestinian situation and I'm going to make a little bit of mention of that, I think, as we go along. We'll see. But that the situation between Israel and Palestine was a big deal, which meant that, who the hell is that guy? Oh, I can't remember his name. The Palestinian dude that was like the nemesis of Israel. Shit, I can't believe I can't remember his name. He was in the news every day. But he was a boogeyman, you know, the media boogeyman of the times for a while there. I can't believe I can't remember his name. Yasser Arafat, right? Now he's a media boogeyman, and they had Muammar Gaddafi, who was a media boogeyman. What was he doing? He was trying to put his country on the gold standard and bypass the petrodollar with the oil production that they had in Libya going on. They attempted to kill him in the 80s, and they finally killed him when in the 2000s. Or even early 2010s, I forget exactly when that was. But he was a media boogeyman too. And of course, I started to say before, with the 9/11, all of a sudden you had the Osama bin Laden as the media boogeyman. And that carried through their war on terrorism, just as long as they can do it. That went all the way into the Obama administration. They finally supposedly killed bin Laden off at that time. There's a lot of speculation that he may have been dead already, or he may never have died, you know. Or he may have died later on of his own natural causes. Nobody really knows. They covered that up. They made up a fucking story. They didn't bring evidence. You know, so who really knows? But the point is, there's always some media, quote-unquote media boogeyman. And the thing about Xi Jinping right now, president of China, as far as his relation to this effort to bring down the Western elite criminality, he has not yet become one of these boogeymen. He's on the periphery of the situation, and he's known to be in partnership with Putin on economic levels, and he's also apparently expressed his interest in the Ukraine situation being brought to an end, and that these investigations into that situation obviously be carried forth. But because he has not been set as a media boogeyman to this point, I kind of wonder where he stands in this situation. He may be just integrally connected to everybody involved with all of this shit on both sides, waiting to capitalize on whatever happens, right? Dude's obviously a genius, right? A strategic genius. All these people are. So I don't know exactly where he stands, but he's not a media boogeyman yet, so I remain iffy about his place in all this at this moment in time. Now see, if you just get on TV and follow the narrative that the Western elite are imposing upon the news channels of the mainstream media, you're obviously only going to get their story, their version of it, their propaganda, their lies. You have to go out on your own and find other alternative sources, right? There's literally, in this day and age, right? And maybe going back 10, 15 years, there's been this rise, this prominence of what's known as the alternative media, right? That we do not have to rely on the fucking TV, which is clearly owned. If you knew like CNN and the history and the people who work there, there's a prevalence of actual CIA personnel working for them. It's like a known thing. It's always Anderson Cooper, right? He was a CIA operative before he was on CNN. Do you think he stopped being that? Oh, I'm retired from the CIA. You don't retire from that. You're a spook. Once a burnout, like me, always a burnout. Once a spook, always a spook. Once a Marine, always Marine. You don't get away from that. You don't get away from that. When you're in that shit, you know too much about it. It's a criminal fuck. It's like the mafia. No, of course not. The dude comes out of a wealthy elitist family, the Gloria Vanderbilts, right? And he is known to have come through the ranks of the CIA. And now he's a voice, and he's been long been a voice of propaganda on a national level, spitting out whatever the narrative is in the interest of these elitists. But for the past 20 years, and you got to give a pat on the back to guys like Bill Cooper, our own Alex Jones out of Texas, right? Rockwall born and raised, a DFW guy, a post-Arlen guy. Rockwall, Texas, where my pit bull Henry comes from. Well, the Texas pit bull, Alex Jones, now operates out of our capital, Austin. Infowars.com, and if you don't know alternative media, he's a decent place to start. He has been made into a boogeyman, a media boogeyman himself. Because why? He works diligently, passionately, feverishly to expose the very things I'm speaking to here, right? He nails a lot of it. He makes mistakes along the way. But he is the great generator of alternate media, the alternative media in his country. And that may be what saves us. This dissident voice, this rebel faction, right? He calls it InfoWars, and he's been calling it that for 25 years. He knew ahead of everybody that that's what this was going to come down to. It's a matter of information. He knew as a media person, you know, always as an independent. He worked the cable channels locally in Texas with his own kind of show, and he was always rubbing elbows, you know. I think he had his first big instance of reporting with the whole Waco incident, which I spoke to in one episode with the David Koresh and the all that shit, right? Alex Jones, as a young man, was a reporter on the scene for that, working independently on his own little local cable show. This is how I understand it to be. And at the same time, obviously, you had the mainstream media down there reporting on this huge federally involved event going on. And I believe that the man established his disdain for what was obvious to him, a bunch of propaganda that he would have to spend his life being at war with, right? And again, one of the big happenstances in the history of this country and ultimately the world was what happened on 9/11. And Alex Jones was the big voice going through the megaphone, the bullhorn, screaming in Manhattan in the city streets, 9/11 was an inside job. 9/11 was an inside job. And he was the spark that set off what we know as the truth movement, right? And this is all everything, everybody that has a lot of serious doubt with a lot of good fucking reason about what the government does, what they're involved with, how they're protecting their own, all this stuff. He sparked that. He sparked that. So InfoWars, information wars. He knew he was into an information war before it actually became a thing, which it has in these past couple of years, really starting with Trump taking power when he did. When Trump took power, he put these elites on notice, and they are running scared. They're doing a lot of shit and making a lot of mistakes from that point forward, and they're using the media to cover their asses as best as they can do. Meanwhile, you've got loudmouths like Alex Jones out there uncovering their cover-ups, and they don't like him either. So look at who the media boogeymen are, and you're probably looking at those who are in flight over the target, ready to drop the bombs. Responsible Americans will sidestep this controlled mainstream propaganda device and get a balance of information the only other place you can look. See, they had set it up, the straw man, right? You have that Fox News network on cable, and that is kind of like your counterpoint to all the other leftist leaning news outlets. But the problem with Fox is it's part of the whole same game. Fox are the Bushes. They're part of the whole piracy thing. They're the over the aisle rhinos, Bush Republicans. They report those interests. They report the neocon agenda, which is in cahoots with the Democrats. That's why they're called rhinos, Republican in name only. They're basically war hawks. The neocons were established by people who had interest in the defense of Israel. And the neocons have always got their support from the evangelical Christians, who are hoodwinked into glorifying Israel as something very important to their end times visions. It's a very fucked up thing that's gone on in this world, you know, very fucked up thing that's gone on in this world. And we need to have alternate perspectives to have some kind of reasonable information to ponder over while we come to conclusions about our belief. We can't just get it from one place. And like I said, strawman, they with the Fox News, they put something in place that seemed like the opposing voice, but it's not, except for perhaps Tucker Carlson, who's got balls, and for some reason they keep him on there. If he wasn't on there, they'd lose control, any kind of control of him that they may have, right? But outside of that, it's a rhino interest. And it's not an alternative to what CNN is doing. It's not an alternative to what MSNBC is doing. It's not an alternative to the major networks on regular broadcast TV. Fox News is not an alternative to that. They're just a different way of saying the same old thing. That's all. That's all. Alternative media is independent journalists. Those are people that in a lot of cases worked for these places and they know what the fuck is going on. You know who's one of those? That Carrie Lake woman who had been running for governor in Arizona and is putting up a fight about the election results. That was a woman who worked in the media. She was in the news industry for her entire career. She knows what goes on the inside there. She knows what that shit's all about. That's one example, you know. Not that she's doing any kind of independent journalism, because obviously she's gotten herself into politics, but that's one example of person who left all that shit to become independent and report independently. There are plenty of them, and that's what a large part of the alternative media is made of. Like I said, they're dissidents, they are a rebel faction, and they are engaged in this information war that I think Alex Jones set off a long fucking time ago. Very interesting stuff. So, like I say, responsible Americans will get all the information they can get. And to do that, you'll have to sidestep the controlled mainstream propaganda lines, the CNN and MSNBC and the Fox News, all that shit, which we recognize in the modern era as quote-unquote fake news. We do. We do. People who know otherwise, people have taken part in the alternative media, recognize the propaganda element of the mainstream media and know that it's fake news. It's just a cover picture overlaying actuality. You have alternatives. You have alternatives. Use them.
The Down Come series continues in the next release of Post Harlan Monologics.
Thank you for tuning into Post Harlan Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post Harlan Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postharlan.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postharlan.com.